Hello and welcome to Crime Time FM and the October edition of The Review Show. I'm Paul Burke and I write about crime fiction. And this month's selection really demonstrates the diversity of this genre. So stay tuned because I promise you you'll find something to take your fancy. So first up is crime fiction legend and CWA Diamond Dagger winner, bestseller of bestsellers, Martina Cole. Loyalty is her first novel in 4 years, and it's written with Jackie Rose, who has her own legion of fans. So this is my first Cole. It's a blockbuster and a genuine page-turner. Her grounded working-class characters are good company throughout their trials and tribulations. Cole's earthy style is compelling, and more than anything, she makes you care about her people, her women. At times the writing isn't great, and for me it's a bit overlong, but I suspect I might be in a minority there. The good points outweigh this anyway, and Cole's drive is truly impressive. This is a story of Dara Taylor and Grace Perry, taken into care as teenagers after two very different but tough starts in life. They bond. Their lives in care worsen with abuse and mistreatment at the Hollybrooks Children's Home. Over the decades of separations, family life, and coming together again, Dara and Grace are the one constant, but their love and friendship are sorely tested. Can they rely on each other in the darkest moments? Cole doesn't pull punches, and this is a challenging read, but I was gripped and emotionally involved. It's an important reminder that a good start in life really might save a world of pain. Published by Headline in hardback and available now. And now for another queen of crime fiction. There's room for more than one at the top table. Yrsa Jigadarsdottir, and her new novel is The Prey, translated by Victoria Cribb. In this story, Jigadarsdottir sets three hares running. 1. A woman buys a house in the fishing village of Höf. She finds an old box and returns it to the son of the previous owner. His mother is now in a care home, suffering from Alzheimer's. The box comes with a girl's shoe, marked with the name Salva, but the man has no recollection of a girl called Salva. Then the hospital rings. His mother is dying, and she's asking for his sister, Salva. It's already intriguing, but then we move on to the second strand of the story. Johanna is part of a search and rescue team in Höf. The weather is drawing in, and a group of people from Reykjavik have gone missing. There are signs that make the rescuers fear the worst. The trip in these conditions is madness. And then they find a body, and Johanna thinks they're being watched. And a third strand. Hirfar mans the Stokesnes radar station, in the hills nearby Höf. It's an ex-US army base. It's isolated. But then the gate phone rings. It sounds like a child asking for a mother. Is this a message from beyond the grave? These three strands come together in a powerful story, where we're not entirely sure whether it's reality or the supernatural that is ruling the situation. The colour, claustrophobia and sense of dread and suspense all leave us craving answers. We are out in the cold too. Like the best storytellers, Jigadarsdottir has us enraptured, and fans of the horror crime crossover will love this latest chilling read, perhaps perfect for Halloween. Published in hardback by Hodder. To Japan now for Hideo Yokoyama's Northlight, translated by Louise Heal Kawai. Still, atmosphere is everything in this haunting read. You may remember 6-4, Yokoyama's 2016 novel shortlisted for the CWA in translation, Dagger. There was a remarkable true story behind that one. In this case, architect Minoru Ose is asked to build a new house for a young couple. They want it in the style of the award-winning Yoshino house that he built in the shadow of Mount Asama. It was the peak of his career. When he finds out that the Yoshino house isn't occupied, it becomes an obsession to find out why. The only possession in the house is a single chair designed by a German architect who fled the Nazis. It sat facing a big window with an east view. Ose put everything into the house. Its rejection adds to the troubles of a life already blighted by money issues, tension at work, and family breakdown. He contacts the family he built the Yoshino house for answers, to discover that his story and that of the family are entwined. An extraordinary mystery unfolds, distinctly Japanese, intricately plotted, and gripping. Yokoyama knows how to find a story and infuse it with a beguiling mystery, a slow burn that really gets to you. Published in hardback by Quercus. For this month, I've asked a couple of authors to tell us a little bit about their own books. So first up, we have Hannah Hendy, who's going to tell us about A Frightfully Fatal Affair, which is the fourth Dinner Lady Detectives novel.
Hi, I'm Hannah Hendy, the author of the Dinner Lady Detectives series, a series of cozy crime novels published by Canelo Crime. My newest book, A Frightfully Fatal Affair, is out this month on the 5th of October and is the fourth in the series. A frightfully fatal affair picks up a few months after the end of book three. Marjorie, Clementine and the rest of the Dinner Lady team are back working at Summerview Secondary School and they're looking forward to a lovely harvest festival and a fantastic end of term break. Unfortunately, on a walk through the nearby woods, Marjorie and Clementine stumble over the body of much-beloved maths teacher Mr. Weaver, who has been missing for days, and that ruins their nice half-term plans and also throws them back into the centre of another murder mystery. Shortly after, mysterious symbols begin to appear, painted all over the town, and strangers in Halloween costumes run riot. It seems that no one in the small town of Dewster is safe, and it's up to Marjorie and Clementine, once again, to sort it all out, with varying degrees of success.
Thank you, Hannah. I think that sounds like a really good one for the cozy fans out there. So over to Nikki Mackay.
The Due Date is a book about two women, Ali and Rebecca, who meet when they're heavily pregnant and discover that their babies are due on the same day. Ali and Rebecca are both lonely for different reasons and the friendship becomes quite intense quite quickly. Their due date comes and goes and Ali hears nothing from Rebecca for weeks and becomes worried about her friend. She tracks her down and is relieved to find her safe and well, but that relief quickly turns to shock when Rebecca denies ever meeting her or ever having been pregnant at all. It's a fast-paced psychological thriller. I hope it's unputdownable, and it's also about friendship, motherhood, and how far we'll go to protect the ones we love. I really enjoyed writing this, and readers seem to be connecting with it too. If it sounds like something you'd like, do pick up a copy.
Thanks, Nikki. That sounds like a bit more of an intense experience, this one. The Due Date is published in hardback by Headline. A pulp infusion now. I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but I love a fast-paced noir, and a gem came across my desk this week. The extremely versatile Lee Goldberg, creator of the Eve Ronin series, Fox and O'Hare, with Janet Ivanovich, Monk, and other TV shows, has a new novel called Calico, which will be out next month. Meanwhile, we have The Crown Vic, which is two short stories featuring a character called Ray Boyd. Now, the Eve Ronin novels are pretty gritty, but this is diamond hard noir. No holds barred, no punches pulled. In the intro, Goldberg tells us that Lawrence Block loved these stories, and I really can see why. But perhaps at the time they were written, they were a little too off the wall for the kind of mainstream publishers who are used to gentler stuff from Goldberg. That said, they really are worthy of an airing. In fact, Goldberg asks if readers would fancy more Ray Boyd. Off the back of reading these two stories, and it's certainly an emphatic yes from me. Ray Boyd did time for boosting high-end muscle cars, and now that he's out, he drives an ex-LAPD Crown Vic Interceptor. His two hobbies are money and women. In Ray Boyd Isn't Stupid, the first story, essentially, he's not making any mistakes that would land him back in prison. But he can't steer clear of trouble, so it's a fine line he's walking. At Granite Point Tourist Resort, he's forced into a job as a handyman by a cop who imposes a pretty steep traffic fine. The locals take to him. The park owner Joe confides in him. The wife lusts after him. And Bob, the cop, watches him intensely. It's a pretty vicious twist on The Postman Always Rings Twice. You wind up at the point where you think, I have no idea who the hell to trust, and I haven't even mentioned the cabin maid Meg. The second story is Occasional Risk. If you're going to take the occasional risk, it might as well be a big one. Ray is sunning himself at the low-rent Copper Oasis Motel when a pretty blonde pulls up in a Merc. Suddenly, there are two people who don't like where they came from and are not sure where they're going. And briefly, they connect. Ray helps Darlene escape the Vibora Sicarios who tailed her there. But it's not for love or altruism. There's a huge wedge of money at stake. Naturally, it all goes sideways. Bad people who lose money don't tend to ask for it back politely. Jack Reacher, Ray certainly isn't. And there are not a whole lot of wrongs righted here. But there sure as hell is a whole lot of fun to be had. Clever stories that riff on the classics. Sharp and to the point. Briskly written. The kind of darkness I love to have in my life, all from the comfort of the page. And I certainly would reiterate, more Ray Boyd, please, Mr. Goldberg. Published by Cutting Edge in paperback and ebook. And now to a book I enjoyed, but I have to say I wasn't as enamored of it as many of the critics were. And this is Geneva by actor Richard Armitage. Clearly Armitage had this story buzzing around his head for some time. And it's an intriguing idea, competently executed. I have to say I was a little put off by the purple prose at the opening, but things soon settled down. Sarah Collier is a Nobel Prize winning scientist, showing early signs of Alzheimer's. Together with her husband Daniel, she attends a biotech conference in Geneva where a new treatment is being unveiled that could revolutionize neuroscience and medicine, possibly aiding Sarah. Nothing is quite what it seems at the clinic. Sarah doesn't know if she can trust Daniel, or even if she can trust her own mind. Slowly, a deadly game unfolds. The portrait of Sarah, a woman with a degenerative brain disease, is ambitious, particularly for a debut, but it is well done and it does evoke empathy, and all the major characters in the novel around it. This is a twisty and unpredictable speculative thriller. Armitage has a very visual sense and a good grasp of setting. It'll be interesting to see what he comes up with next and whether he has true staying power. Published by Faber in hardback. And now three releases I put together because they're all published by Arenda. These authors are firm favourites for me. In fact, I go so far as to say unmissable. The first is The Beaver Theory by Finnish author Antti Tuomainen. It's the completion of the Rabbit Factor trilogy, translated by David Haxton. Humour may be the toughest thing to translate, so hats off to Haxton because, as ever, Tuomainen's funny bone is gloriously exposed. My first encounter with Tuomainen was Palm Beach, Finland, an hilarious blend of chaotic free-fall plotting and endearing screwed-up characters, bewildered by life and not necessarily making good choices to put things right. Poet and wordsmith Tuomainen is proof that the stereotype of the Finnish male as the morose alcoholic who cracks his head on the bottom of the swimming pool in Mallorca is wide of the mark. Finns have a fine sense of humour. The Beaver Theory is a warm, quirky, intricately plotted and very funny crime fiction. Henry Koskinen works in the risk management department of an insurance company, which suits his mathematical genius. He's not so well suited to running the adventure park he's inherited. Financially, it's really not going well. Things are made worse by theme park competitors, Somersault City, who want to put him out of business and are not beyond threatening personal harm. His life is complicated by his relationship to artist Laura Helanto and her daughter. Henry breaks into Somersault City for a look around and finds more than he bargained for. He winds up fleeing the scene of a murder in the shadow of an 18-meter beaver. Bodies will drop. Things will spiral out of control. Life and death attack Henry with gusto. It's pleasing to see that Amazon are doing a series of The Rabbit Factor, featuring Steve Carell. If done well, Tuomainen's dark humour should light up the screen as it does the page. This is not the best of the Henry Koskinen novels, but he still goes out on a high. Next up is White as Snow by Lilja Sigurdardottir, translated by Quentin Bates. Her Reykjavik Noir trilogy, Snare, Trap and Cage, was a perfect example of personal dramas with wider ramifications, the crime story that illuminates societal ills. Very Icelandic and yet universal. The same values permeate the Aurora Investigation series, of which White as Snow is the third, following Cold as Hell and Red as Blood. P.I. Aurora is haunted by the disappearance of her sister. Meanwhile, she tackles her most dangerous investigation yet, as the temperature drops and 24-hour darkness approaches. When the police discover five young women in a shipping container, they barely realize that one is alive. Just, this is an horrific case that will test Detective Daniel Hansson to the limit. Aurora, by trade, is a forensic accountant, but her sister's case has got her into criminal investigations, and now she's working for a woman called Elin. Elin is well off. Her younger boyfriend is pressuring her to marry him, but there's something bothering her about that. She asks Aurora to investigate Sergei. Both Daniel and Aurora's cases force them to confront the nastiest of criminals. To complicate matters, Elin is Daniel's ex, but the connections don't end there. This is another skillfully plotted thriller that makes the most of local colour, the weather and the atmosphere of foreboding and revulsion at terrible crimes. It's a dark and chilling literary psychological thriller. It can be read as a standalone, but the three novels in the series together have that connectivity and sense of values that mean that you get more out of it as a complete read. Once again, the local feel is matched by the universality of the story. And next, Stigma, by Jørn Lierhorst and Thomas Enger, two writers among the creme de la creme of Norwegian crime writing, give us a treat as a writing duo. I've been a fan of Lierhorst since the earliest days of the William Wisting novels, and Enger since the first Henning Juhl mystery, Wisting the cop, Juhl the journalist. Together as the dream team, they've created the Blix and Ram series, which opened with Death Deserved. Stigma is the fourth book, and is translated by Megan Turney. In the early hours of the morning, Walter Kreuz, who hears voices, kills his father. He believes he's righting a wrong, but he's made a big mistake. Former senior policeman Alexander Blix is in jail for exacting revenge for the death of his daughter. He's a broken, purposeless man, a victim of prison yard cruelty, much of it orchestrated by Yarling Garay. Emma Rahm, whose life was saved by Blix, is concerned for his well-being. Kreuz has escaped custody in Germany and is heading to Norway. Blix's former colleagues are on the case. But it turns out that though he's no longer a detective, Blix is uniquely placed to work the case. Kreuz has a link to his tormentor in jail, Yarling Garay. Working the investigation, inside and outside of prison, leads to a small woodland village where the locals are harbouring a very dark secret indeed. Leohorst and Enger are top crime writers. Together they're formidable. They've crafted great central characters here and know how to thrill and chill with their noirish storytelling. And as I said, for my money, Leohorst and Enger, Tuominen, and Sigurðardóttir are all unmissable. And this month it's great to see the return of Trevor Mark Thomas with Dry Cleaning. Some of you may remember The Bothy, published in 2019, and will recall it was a really promising debut, a closed-circle mystery with the energy of a play and a kind of Pinter-esque sense of dialogue. In Dry Cleaning, Ethan Mallam is fresh out of prison. He served 5 years for an assault he didn't actually commit. It was the boss's son, Tony, who did that. Tony won't say why he put Stu in a coma. The thing is, the boss, Les, promised Ethan £500,000 for taking the fall. Only he now says Tony burned through all the cash. They don't have it. In fact, Tony, the son, is now muscling in on his dad's territory. And the only way to get his due is for Ethan to get close to Tony. Tony is paranoid, brutal and greedy. Les is equally ruthless, but playing a much more careful game. It's not long before Ethan is knee-deep in murder and caught between Les and Tony. His life is soon on the line. Is there any redemption for Ethan here? A chance to recoup some of the money he's owed, perhaps, and maybe get some revenge for that betrayal by Les and Tony. A gangster thriller with a simple story that takes twists and delivers surprises. Entertaining in both narrative and style, and deceptively deep. Published by Salt in paperback. A quick word for a book that's not exactly a crime novel, but it is relevant here. Lee Goldberg, mentioned earlier about his two short stories, Crown Vic, previously published a reprint of Ralph Dennis's brilliant Atlanta-set Hardman novels, and now he brings us Windsprints, Ralph Dennis's first and to date unpublished campus novel. It clearly has elements of the autobiographical about it, and it's written, if not with self-loathing, with a certain disdain. It's not a flattering portrait of the narrator, a man who has an inability to forge relationships with women. He lacks respect for others and gives off bad vibes as someone who doesn't like themselves much either. He's a man in a permanent funk. He wants to be a successful writer. He's bored with academia. He drinks too much and he's running to seed. His misogyny and bitterness are unpleasant, but there's also a vulnerability and honesty here too. Sure, it's an uncomfortable read, but also a poignant one. What is clear, though, is Dennis's voice, his noirish temperament, and signs of the style that make the later novels crime classics. Discovering this novel and bringing it to the public was clearly a labour of love for Goldberg, and it's truly to be applauded. I think this is one for the fans of Dennis and people who want to understand writers' origins. Depending on how much of this fiction is really Dennis, he was an unhappy individual who sadly never got his due in his lifetime. But damn, what a writer. Published by Cutting Edge in paperback. Very different but equally in your face is Grant Morrison's Luda, a magnum opus from a writer more famous for their comics, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, X-Men, et al., and also famous as the author of original works, Sea Guy, The Filth, and WE3, and working with Netflix and Sci-Fi Channel. He describes himself as a playwright, musician, and occultist. But this debut novel feels like a labour of love. Lucy Labang is a drag princess and a pantomime dame, the Grand Duchess of the Glasgow music hall, Valhambra, where she believes she is reinventing the pantomime. Her secret passion is the glamour, a mix of sex and drugs and occult that gives her power. Lucy has a quick wit and a tongue that make Lily Savage look positively shy and retiring, a bitchiness that perhaps covers her insecurities. Lucy is afraid now that time is catching up with her. When her co-star is mysteriously injured, a new star is born, Luda. As Lucy draws Luda under her wing, tragedy strikes again and again at the production they're working on. The pantomime becomes shrouded in death. What role is Luda playing in this misfortune? This is one that goes way over the top. It's about glamour, vulgarity, outrageousness, malevolence, irony, mystery, a big dose of humour, totally off the wall. A take on the Faustian song-selling that will appeal to those not easily shocked or offended, and open to diverse voices in their reading tastes. Published by Europa Editions. And that brings us to The Defector by pilot and astronaut Chris Hadfield. A Cold War techno-thriller that's set on the eve of the Yom Kippur War in 1973. Loosely based on real events and has some real characters. It's a chase novel on the grandest geopolitical scale. Most likely to attract in its sight readers of the high-octane thriller, more than the literary spy thriller. But it's a highly competent follow-up to Hadfield's exceptional debut, The Apollo Murders, a pulse-raising read. As war approaches, a top Russian pilot goes AWOL with his new state-of-the-art jet, the legendary MiG-25 known as the Foxbat. This is technology the United States covets. Reappearing in this novel, pilot and NASA flight controller Kazimakis is soon pulled into a game of cat and mouse as he attempts to bring home the prized defection. But what's the real intent of this pilot? Is this the big win the United States anticipates? This doesn't quite have the power and drive of the first novel, but is nonetheless entertaining and certainly a high-octane hit, published by Quercus in hardback. And finally, but a real treat to finish off, a brilliant selection of books in the second tranche of Penguin Espionage and Crime Classics. All 10 of these books are published this month. Quite apart from being beautiful in themselves, these are novels that any serious crime fan should take a look at. They've been reprinted, and that's partly because they still stand up many years after publication and still have a freshness and originality, even if you've read more modern books that feed on their brilliance. So we have two of the best from Raymond Chandler in one volume, Farewell My Lovely and The Big Sleep. Worth it for the dialogue alone, but who doesn't love Marlowe? The incomparable John le Carré masterpiece, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, is still the blueprint for a genre. Eric Ambler, the maestro of the international thriller, is represented by The Mask of Demetrius. And another less well-known these days legend of the spy genre is Anthony Price. Other Paths to Glory is one of his best, featuring Dr. David Audley. An intriguing early 20th century crime thriller comes from C.S. Forrester, more famous for his hornblower and naval thrillers. This one's called Payment Deferred. And Brat Farah by Golden Age doyen Josephine Tay are musts for students of that period of British crime writing. Games Without Rules by Michael Gilbert and Sleeping Dogs by Dick Locht are books fallen out of favour that deserve a modern audience. There's Maygray's Revolver for fans of The Great Detective, and my personal favourite, The Black Lizard by Edgar Allan Poe. Think Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty, or should that be Irene Adler, only this is a Japanese masterpiece. It's sexier and funnier, and I know that second one isn't much of a high bar, but it's a superb read. So surely there must be something there that grabs your fancy. So introduce yourself or reintroduce yourself to Marlowe or Maigret, Smiley or Audley, The Dark Angel, Charles Latimer, Leo Bloodworth, Brett Farah, Mr. Behrens, and or William Marble. All available from Penguin, of course. Well, that's it for this month. I'll be back with another selection next month. If you've enjoyed the show, please rate and subscribe with your favourite podcast provider. For now, thank you very much for listening and goodbye.